You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.
And welcome to the Monday edition of Game Misconduct. I'm Don LaGreca. He's Anthony Pusick. How are you?
Good, Don. What'd you think of All-Star Weekend?
Good. I just got to get out of the way that EJ is indisposed today.
It's
unavailable.
Sad. I don't like
so
it.
So I just sent a message out to him that we're going to try to get something together for maybe Wednesday's podcast, which is fine. I just want to get his thoughts on everything Toronto and everything All-Star. But, you know, we watched, we were engaged, and we can give our thoughts just as easily, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Why not?
Listen, it is what it is, right? The All-Star game is, I think, not really skewed for a 55-year-old, maybe skewed more in your area, but I still had fun with it. The skills competition, I guess, was dominated by the Kucherov accuracy and how he kind of gave up and the fans got on him. I thought it was funny, actually, you know, just his reaction and how he became like the villain the next day during the All-Star game and all that. So I'm not going to kill him. I understand the frustration. Even Ray Ferraro talked about how difficult that is and how really they stepped up the difficulty of these skills that they had to do on Friday. And then how difficult it was, and I felt for Matt Barzell, too, when he was going through the obstacle course. He's not going to win. He's got to get it into the little net. It's get up to 45 seconds. I mean, you'd almost understand if he just threw his hands up and said, all right, I quit. He didn't. Good on him. But I just thought it was funny. I'm not going to get mad at Nikita Kucherov for his reaction. What was your thoughts?
I have to remember, or I have to guess, I have to check, because obviously All-Stars have to participate, but are the All-Stars forced to participate? Did they choose 12 people that absolutely had to do this? Because I think that there are probably guys, and Matt Barzell, of course, was a late addition to not only this, but the team in general.
Right.
Where he actually gave a lot of effort, and he made it to the final because of how well he did. This was created by Connor McDavid, so it's natural that he won it. He would probably know the course or anything else better than anybody and what it entailed, and he's also the best player in the world, so it makes sense that he would win a skills competition. For me, it's tough when this is supposed to be something that the guys are supposed to enjoy. This is supposed to be more player-driven because it was created by a player, where it's not this kind of hokey, and look, everything's going to have its own little quirks about it, but it's kind of frustrating to me that out of the 12 guys to do it, one guy seemed like he was going to go through the motions with it, because I did think it was a lot of fun, and ESPN did a great job keeping track of the live stats, who was in first, who was in second, who needed to do well in this particular thing. And Kucherov just kind of seemed like, you know what, I'm kind of going to coast through this. And it wasn't after, oh, I got off to a bad start. Like, he just kind of did half speed for most of it, which was kind of frustrating to me. Right. But again, like you said, then am I going to kill him? No. Is he ever going to never be allowed back? No. But I just wish that on the first installment of this, there were 12 guys fully bought in, because it seemed like the other 11 were, and it just seemed like he wasn't. And that kind of just took the fun out of it a little bit for me when he performed, but it didn't take away from everybody else doing well, which I thought was great.
And what you see is that just how outstanding Connor McDavid is. Like, you could
unbelievable.
Say, well, he put it together, but you just see how skilled he is. And then Ray Ferraro threw something. I think it was Ferraro. There was a bunch of different people. It was Messier. I don't think Messier would have said it. PK didn't say it either. I think where Ray said that, you know, maybe when it's all said and done, that McDavid may turn out to be the greatest player in the history of the sport. And it sounds ridiculous because of all the things that Gretzky accomplished, but I think he can put himself in the conversation because he is just, I think, so much better than everybody else. And the game is different, too. I know it's a little bit more wide open than it's ever been, but it's not to the point it was in the 1980s where guys were, you know, getting high 100 points and routinely scoring north of 60 goals. It hasn't gotten to that point yet, but he just seems just so gifted and so skilled and so fun to watch and so humble and such a guy that's easy to root for. And I'm captivated by him. So I'm not mad at the opinion. I don't agree with it because I think Gretzky's just on a completely different level. But maybe when the dust settles on all this 100 years from now, 200 years from now, that Connor McDavid's in that conversation and maybe not the second best player ever to play.
Yeah, I think he's going to have to win in order to reach that pinnacle. I think he's talented enough. I hadn't seen Gretzky play, so I'm not going to say that I think he's more talented than Gretzky. I just can't. I mean, I could look at highlights and things of that nature, Don, but I'm not going to compare a player that I'd never seen before to a player that I have seen. And Connor McDavid's one of the best players that I've ever seen. I'm well aware of all the statistics that make Gretzky the best player in the world, and it would be hard for me to knock somebody off that pedestal. He will have to win at some point. This team is playing well right now. Do they have a chance to make the final this year? Maybe. But the teams around him in the West are getting better. I think that he's so good, there's no way. Just like Ovechkin, and it took him a while too, there's no way that a player of that ilk is not going to find a cup at some point.
Let me just bring this up. And I'm not here to disrespect Gretzky and his championship.
Oh, boy.
But you're talking about a 21-team league. You're talking about he was on the best team in the NHL. After he left, they won a cup.
Well, I'm not saying he has to match him.
But I'm just saying, even just winning, like, you know, because, all right, what if Gretzky never played for the Edmonton Oilers and played for the Los Angeles Kings his entire career and then eventually went on to St. Louis and the Rangers? He never won after Edmonton. He went to a Stanley Cup final in 1993 with the Kings, and that just shows you how special he was, because that Kings team could never get over the hump and then finally did, and he was huge in Game 7 against the Leafs. So this is not a referendum on him not being clutch in the postseason. He certainly was, but again, it all depends on what team you're on, because he had Curry, and he had Messier, and he had Fuhr, and he had Anderson. I mean, it just, the list of players on that Edmonton Oilers team was amazing, and he won his four cups, because then Messier ended up winning the year after for his fifth cup, and then he went to the Rangers and then won another one. You know, Gretzky never did. He did go to the final in 93, did go to the conference final with the Rangers in 97. So again, this is not to knock Gretzky, but sometimes, Anthony, you just got to be on the right team. And when you look at that Edmonton team, even though you didn't grow up watching it, you know the names. So those names still resonate with you, even though they were all accomplished before you were born. And that's how good that Edmonton team was. Has Connor McDavid ever been on a stacked team? You know, Leon Draisaitl is an excellent player, but is there anybody else that's even going to approach Hall of Fame there? When you look at all the players that Alexander Ovechkin played with, Nicholas Backstrom's probably going to go to the Hall of Fame as well, but not nearly as good. And those Pittsburgh teams were amazing when you look at the players getting to play with Malkin and getting to play with Letang. And there was so I wouldn't put that Pittsburgh team on the Edmonton level, but it certainly was loaded. So if Crosby was a Capital his whole life and Ovechkin was a Penguin his whole life, Would he have four rings to just want? Like, so I think where you are matters in the conversation. So I think it's kind of unfair to say, well, four championships for Gretzky and that McDavid has to win. Because I don't know in this day and age with 32 teams and four best of seven series whether you necessarily can drag a team to a championship, Anthony. It's not like it is in basketball. I just think you got to be on the right team, and maybe this year's Edmonton team is turning into that with a 16-game winning streak they're going to try to extend tomorrow or later this week. But when you say he's got to win one, if he stays on Edmonton and Edmonton's kind of what they've been his entire career, can he?
Well, it's a fair point by you, and I would say this to add to your point and kind of detract from mine. I think Alex Ovechkin, even if he didn't win that cup a couple of years ago, would still have gone down as one of the best goal scorers in NHL history just in general and one of the best players ever without winning. But I think it just adds him to a pantheon of I also won, which shows that I was at the top of my game and my team won a cup. Not I won a cup, my team won a cup. As you said, it's a team sport, and it's going to take more than just the one player, and we saw that because Ovechkin was probably arguably better 4 or 5 years before he won the cup than he was in the year that they won the cup. He was still at the top of his game playing unbelievable hockey, but his prime was probably like 3 or 4 years before, and they didn't make it. They would get stopped by the Rangers a bunch of times, or the Penguins. When you talk about he's going to surpass Gretzky, for me, he has to surpass him in something. I don't think it's going to be points. I don't think it's going to be assists. But could he win two cups, and then maybe he's at that level with him? Or I don't know. I just have to see. I have to see something more. And of course, he's got plenty of time to do it. He's young. He's not going anywhere. He's an unbelievable player, and it doesn't look like he's going to slow down at any point here. He's going to get into that conversation, Don, but I'm not going to be ready to say that I could see him on a trajectory right now to surpass Gretzky, but that's just me.
It's interesting, but it was just a nice conversation. I thought ESPN did a very good job. I thought Toronto did a good job as well. Couple of things that came out of the weekend, basically Friday, because Gary Bettman had that State of the Union that he has during the All-Star break. He'll have another one during the Stanley Cup Final. But, of course, expansion came up, and he kind of poo-pooed the whole idea of expansion, which leads to me this conspiracy theory, and see if you can follow me.
Listen, my paper and I have my pen.
All right. You could say all you want that the NHL released the statement about Utah wanting a team when the five players from the 2018 Canadian World Junior team came out and used it as a distraction, whatever. You can also look at it as, hey, just Utah wants a team, and it's not the NHL's fault that Utah released the statement and all that. But I believe Gary when he says there doesn't seem to be an appetite for expansion just yet. So if I believe that, I believe this is all just a ploy to apply pressure on the Arizona to get a new stadium or a new arena for the Coyotes and have a legitimate threat to move somewhere. Like, now it's not hypothetical anymore. Utah wants a team. It's a team that's in that area so they can stay in the Central Division, just to put the pressure of, hey, Utah, you're going to get a team. Maybe it's not going to be an expansion team, but if the Coyotes do not get this arena, now it becomes real. Now it's not, well, maybe Quebec City, maybe Houston, maybe Kansas City, you know, all these maybes, maybes, maybes. Utah now becomes a reality, a destination to apply the pressure on getting this arena done, and they want to be able to break ground on it very soon, Anthony. So I think it's all just a ploy to get the new arena, and if they don't, I think the Coyotes are moving to Utah.
Well, it may not even be that much of a conspiracy theory by you, Don, because if you saw 2 days ago, right around the time that Gary Bettman had his press conference, the Coyotes are close to reaching an agreement for 200 acres of state land in North Phoenix. So they're looking, they're trying, they know that they're going to need an arena. Now, I think that Mullett has, it's perks. I mean, it's a very small arena, but it's a small confine. It's hard to play in because there are a bunch of rabid fans and only so many that could fit in there when it is full. So if the Coyotes are playing well, you can imagine that a very intimate arena like that would be a benefit to a team like the Coyotes. But 2 days ago, the Coyotes put out a statement, either whether they feel the pressure or not, they felt the need to say, hey, we're close to striking a deal on some land 200 acres north of Phoenix in an effort to get a new arena here. We want to keep this team in Arizona. So whether Bettman's comments about Salt Lake or Salt Lake coming out and saying they want a team, and Kevin Weeks' report that Atlanta is or Georgia is building that arena that is, you know, tied to having a hockey team at some point in the near future, all of that pressure telling Arizona, hey, we have to come out with something saying we're making an effort here, you might not be wrong on your conspiracy theory. You might just be 8 steps ahead of us all, Don.
Well, we'll see. I just can't wrap my mind around a 34-team league. I really can't. You know, can you just imagine, because I don't know when baseball is going to expand to 32, or basketball. I know there's conversation in both leagues about expansion, but not as heated as the NHL seems to be about it. Can you just imagine the NHL having 34 teams and MLB and the NBA still with 30?
Hey, listen, it would be the it would be the one thing that sets us apart from the other leagues by far, and the fact that you have 4 more teams than everybody else, and 2 more than the NFL. I don't see it, because as good as Vegas was in their expansion, and Seattle has turned it around quicker than other expansion teams of years past, I don't know if the talent is there in this league to put 2 more expansion teams, unless we're raising this cap at some point, because I know that that the league was kind of in a hole because of COVID, and the projected cap that was supposed to go up did not as a result of COVID, and we're kind of getting out of that now, and you're going to start to see the cap inch up a little bit. But boy, oh boy, you take a look at where the cap is in these other sports, Don, and I know that hockey is hockey has a lot more players than basketball, but you see how much money that the NBA could spend on their 12 to 13 roster guys, and then you take a look at how Connor McDavid gets, you know, paid like a utility second baseman in baseball, and you say, wow, this is now, look, expansion can only be good for the league because it brings in more money, generates more revenue. Vegas has been successful, Seattle's been successful, but we've also seen failures in Atlanta, Winnipeg having to move and then come back. You don't want to expand too quickly, and I think Commissioner Bettman is aware of that. So I think he's glad that everything has been working out right now and always looking to the future, but I don't see it happening within the next 2 to 3 years. Maybe Arizona has to move. That's a different conversation, like you said. But yeah, 34 teams would be a lot, no question about it.
Yeah, this should be a lot of fun to kind of keep an eye on that.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We talked about it a little bit on Friday because it kind of just broke about the NHL officially now going to Italy for 2026. And also no All-Star game next year, kind of a preview of the Olympics in 2025. In lieu of the All-Star game will be a series with the United States, Canada, Sweden, and Finland.
Pretty cool.
So that should be really cool. Now, obviously, Russia is out because of obviously the relationship, what's going on now with the Ukraine. And I guess they just these four work. All right. I mean, that they're each roster is going to be loaded. It should be a lot of fun. So I'm really looking forward to it. The All-Star game is what it is. But I think this could be a really fun tournament. And then it kind of whets the appetite for the following year when there will be no All-Star game because of the fact that there's the Olympics. So at least I guess that's a plan. I guess they can squeeze an All-Star game in. I haven't heard officially yet. But still, it'll whet the appetite for the Olympics and the NHL players going in there. Apparently, the NHL is going to have a little bit more control for promotion standpoint. So that should be good. So it seems like everybody's really excited about these two events coming up in 25 and 26.
Well, they should be. I mean, other than the All-Star game, we haven't really gotten a chance to see, since the World Cup of Hockey, the best players play against the best players on a stage that wasn't National Hockey League teams. And to be able to get that in a small sample size of four of the dynamite nations in this world for hockey. Of course, you're missing a large portion of it because Russia is not participating and essentially cannot participate. You're losing a good chunk of some of the most talented players, but this is going to be the, like you said, Don, Olympic preview of, hey, look at this is how some of these teams are going to look. You could look at the U.S. and you could think how stacked they're going to be. You know Sweden's going to be ultra-talented. I mean, Canada speaks for itself. It's going to be unbelievable. Somebody was putting out, imagine what the USA power play is going to look like. And then someone said, well, imagine what the Canada power play is going to look like. I mean, you could almost have all the Hugheses on the American power play. It's unbelievable. And to think that you could have Crosby and McDavid on the same power play unit, it's insane. And Cale Makar as your defensive point man, with maybe Adam mm-hmm. Fox as your defensive point man. I mean, it's some of the best of the best. And that's what I think is so fun. And that's why I loved watching the Olympics when hockey was there. It's going to be great to have it back, at least guaranteed for two Olympics, which is awesome. But this Nations of Hockey is going to be something very exciting. And quite frankly, as much as I love what the NHL did this year, and it's going to stink that all the work they did, if there is no All-Star game, is going to kind of go to waste next year, because I thought that whether it was Toronto or just the way they presented everything, I thought that this weekend was a huge success. I'm sure we'll get the ratings at some point. Whether it was a ratings bonanza or not, it seemed like everybody enjoyed it, except for Nikita Kucherov. The fans enjoyed it. Michael Bublé clearly enjoyed it. The people that were there as either fans or as celebrities seemed to get something out of it more than what I think they have in years past. I thought Vegas was a good setup a couple of years ago. And then I think that Toronto has kind of said it. And people said, can we just have it in Toronto all the time? Just because it seems like everybody just loves hockey so much up there that it would be great to just have it there. And I know that they change it around and they switch it up. But
right.
It just seemed like it was a very, very successful weekend. And for times where even I won't necessarily turn it on all the time, I was kind of glued to my TV. The games were exciting. I know there's not as much defense as there would be in a regular game, but everybody seemed to enjoy it. You got to see a showcase of the best talent in the league, and I thought it was overall a big success.
Yeah, Tate McRae did a great job. Everybody's flipping out about her performance.
Well, listen, Don, I told you. You were not familiar with her work.
I was not familiar with her work. I am now.
And now you are.
Yeah, it's very good.
Very good.
A lot of people want to see her in the Super Bowl. Move over Usher. They want Tate McRae.
There you go.
From Calgary, getting a chance to play. But listen, it was a good time. Now we get back to work. Just a couple of games tonight, but both are pretty important. Avalanche at the Rangers. Second game of the suspension for Trouba. So that's a big test. And then the Rangers got Tampa on Wednesday. So right out of the box, you know, they got that win 7-2 over Ottawa. And we'll see if they can get that going. Otherwise, you know, a couple of losses here before they go to Chicago on Friday won't look great. And the Islanders, desperate for a win, have to go to Toronto to take on the Maple Leafs, then come home to take on the Lightning as well. So couple of really big games for two of the locals here coming right out of the box.
Question, Don.
Yes.
Who's going to be at that Lightning Islander game on Thursday?
The Lightning Islander game, the Michael Kay show is going to be out there.
You're kidding me.
Michael Kay, Don LaGreca, and Peter Rosenberg. They're going to open the doors early.
That's awesome.
Looking forward to that. Should be a lot of fun. Can't wait for a chance to get together with the boys at a really good arena. Should be a lot of fun for that one.
But you did nail it. I mean, these are two games right out of the box for both the Islanders and the Rangers that you want to at least show. Look, as long as I've been a fan, and at least over the last 10 to 15 years, the Rangers do not do well coming off of long rests.
No.
Their legs are not under them. I think Peter Laviolette does a good job of keeping this team ready for anything. But he was in Toronto. Shesty was in Toronto. Trocheck was in Toronto. Shesty actually had a pretty nice performance in the shootout.
He did.
Of the final game, which is nice. And people said, you know, how is that going to prepare you for this stretch run here, and he gave the right answer. I mean, what are you going to say? I mean, it was nice that he was able to stop those shots. Hopefully a nice confidence boost for him, but until he does it in the game, what are you going to do? And Alex Georgiev, the Avalanche goalie, $100,000 richer for the most saves in that one-on-one, which was pretty impressive. But no, I mean, look, you want to come out of the gate strong, right? These are two games against teams that you think you'll match up pretty well against. I mean, the Avalanche are one of the best teams in the West. The Rangers were playing earlier like one of the best teams in the East, and if the Islanders want to compete, they're going to have to compete with teams like Toronto, who are pretty much on the fringe of being a top three team in the Atlantic and in the wild card. If you want to catch those guys, you got to beat those guys. Did Patrick Waugh be able to implement some things over this week break where he can kind of get the defensive structure of the Islanders a little more sound, maybe develop a little bit more offense from his top six? That remains to be seen. Can Toronto, again, on a fringe spot of the top three. They want to come out strong, too, and they're home. You don't want to lose your first game at home for the Rangers and the Maple Leafs. You don't want to lose the first game out of the break on your home rink. So the two very interesting games, should be two exciting games, and something to wet our beaks before we get back to the eight-game slate on Tuesday.
All right, let's hear from you at Don LaGreca and at Anthony Pusick at hashtag Game Misconduct. Our friend Sir Harvey Cruz chimes in.
Hey, Harv.
All right, who wins the President's Trophy, and is there a way to make winning it more valuable? Maybe picking first-round opponents or first-round bye or more draft picks? Please bring this up with the commissioner when you have the time.
Yeah, I don't love the whole picking. I mean, baseball wanted to do that too, Don, with the wild card. I don't love that. I kind of like this is the bracket, this is the way it's going to go. Whether you like the way the bracket system is right now or not is another story. I kind of just like it as you get the trophy and you get to raise, if you want to raise a banner, you can.
But I do hear what he's saying. Like you get presented with a trophy. You want teams that are already locked in to the playoffs, and maybe you're already locked in to winning their division and securing home ice for the first couple of rounds to still want to be engaged late in the season to try to get the President's Trophy. And right now, I don't think anybody really has an appetite to do it. It kind of comes with a curse, although I don't buy into it. But still, nobody's going to kill themselves to win that last game to win the President's Trophy unless there's something on the line. What about this? Since you make a big deal out of it, you present a trophy to the team with the best record in the regular season, and the 8 seed is theoretically a team that barely made the playoffs. Do you have something where they get potential five home games out of seven instead of four?
I don't necessarily
hate
that.
Where the first three games are at home, where it's, hey, I want to give you something for it.
3-2-2?
Yeah, something like that.
3-2-2. I wouldn't hate that. I feel that I like that better than picking your opponent.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't like picking the opponent. I also don't like, you can't do a bye. That doesn't make sense.
No.
Unless you're just going to completely scrape the format. And as far as who's going to win it, you know, right now it's between Vancouver and Boston. Both have 71 points. Both have the exact same winning percentage. I guess the tiebreaker obviously would go to Vancouver because of more Roe wins, but it's between those two. I mean, Colorado's still close, four back. Florida is five back, so it's still possibility. Dallas, Winnipeg, and all that. But right now, Vancouver, Boston. You want to go with Boston because of the pedigree. You want to go with Vancouver that should get better after the Lindholm deal. I'm going to pick Vancouver. I've been on them all year. I'm going to say Vancouver is going to win the President's Trophy.
I'll agree with you with Vancouver. You want my hot take that I might come out of the second half with?
I like it.
I think Florida wins the East.
Definitely.
And that's not, again, I'm not talking about like a team that's right now in eighth going to jump, but I like the way they've been playing. I'm not saying Boston won't be there, but when you say it's between Vancouver and Boston because they're tied in points right now, I agree with you on that. I could see Florida winning the Atlantic, and if they go on enough of a run, they could possibly win the President's Trophy. I wonder what the odds are on ESPN BetR for that right now.
I'm going to take a look.
But I think they can win the Atlantic, and then if they can win the Atlantic, if you think, Don, that Vancouver and Boston are right neck and neck, I think that obviously that would mean that Florida is neck and neck with them too. But I would choose between those two teams, Vancouver, and I won't say Boston in the East has the best chance to win. I will say that Florida has the best chance to win.
I like it. AZ Ranger said, good morning, guys. Why does it seem like Shesterkin gets more heat than Sorokin? They've had very similar subpar seasons, and the only one that has a Vezina is Shesty. You never seem to say that Shesty can steal a series like you do with Sorokin. Yes, I'm biased. Well, the reason they say that Sorokin can steal a series is his team's not as good.
Yeah, that's what it is.
That's what it is. I mean, because the Rangers, I think, are considered a better team than the Islanders, so why would Shesterkin be asked to steal a series? That's why that vernacular is used. Now, why? Probably because people don't appreciate Sorokin as much. I mean, when you look at the head-to-head, Anthony, Sorokin has been the better goaltender when they faced each other. But I think there's a lot of attention because of winning the Vezina Trophy, because of going to the conference final more recently, that there's a lot more pressure on Shesterkin. But I think because of who he plays for, and then maybe the expectations aren't quite as high, but I think it's a great point by AZ Ranger that they both have struggled.
No, and look, we talked about it last week, right, Don? I think I said top five goalies, or at least goalies that were in the top five within the last 2 or 3 years, their save percentages are in the 90s, which is not what you're used to seeing. Ottinger's one of them. Shesterkin's one of them, and Sorokin's one of them. I think that you realize the limitations of the Islander roster, or at least you should realize the limitations of the Islander roster. As a result of that, you know, okay, even if he's at the top of his game, he may not have the numbers that Shesterkin should have because the team's playing better in front of him. Now, ironically enough, the Rangers are playing just as bad as the Islanders were at their worst at some point this season. And yes, Shesterkin is getting more heat, but that's because they got off to such a hot start. Goaltending was a big part of that, and then it all of a sudden bottomed out for what would seem like no reason, but the whole team in general wasn't playing good in front of him. Sorokin's been dealing with that all year. So you kind of get I wouldn't say a pass, but you kind of understand, okay, this team hasn't been playing well anyway. Sorokin's an amazing goaltender, but how much can he do on his own? At some point, you would think that Shesterkin will have to pick up his game because the Rangers will get better and should get better. And that is why I think that that is there. Also, it's just that the Rangers are the more popular team. If the Islanders were near the top of the Metro and Sorokin was not playing well, you would be hearing that Sorokin needs to be better. But Ranger fans are also very quick to turn on their star goaltender, as we know, from the multitude of tweets we get about him to be traded.
I know. And it is crazy. Sean Gleason says, what player could be on the move that maybe hasn't been thought about yet or discussed over the Twitterverse? Who would surprise you the most? Good question.
I guess it would have to mean that there was somebody that's upset that we don't know about, or a team that possibly thinks they're out of it, or they're not going to be able to sign somebody, and that's going to allow them to.
The problem is with this, like, you know, you don't get surprises anymore because everybody's out there, right? Everybody knows the Caps situation. Everybody knows who's a free agent. So there really isn't that many surprises. So I'm just for blanks and giggles, I'm going to just throw this name out to you. I'm not saying I heard anything, and he's got a no movement clause. But would there ever be a situation where there would be any conversation about moving Alexander Ovechkin?
That's interesting.
And Washington looks like they've got to go to rebuild. Now, it's a big, like I said, he's got a no-movement clause. He's under contract through 25-26 at big money, $9.5 million. So it's a really difficult contract to move. 38 years old, not having a great season. You're not exactly selling high, but you're trying to talk about players that would like shock you, but it kind of makes sense because there could be a team out there that says, yeah, I'd love Alexander Ovechkin. I just want him on my team when he eventually breaks Gretzky's record or something. Like, or does Washington say, listen, we're in a rebuild here. We're not going anywhere, but it's nice to have Ovechkin finish his career. I don't think it would happen, but if you really want to commit to a rebuild and Backstrom is done, can that be a piece where you say, okay, we're finally going to officially move on? That's a name that would surprise me. Now, Pittsburgh's not going to get rid of Crosby. They're too close. They're too much financial commitment around him. When you look at the financials with Washington, they've got Kuznetsov's a free agent after next year. Oshie's a free agent after next year. Mantha's a free agent this year. Pacioretty's a free agent this year. They don't have a lot of contracts, Anthony, outside of Carlson, who's signed through 26, 27. Their defensemen are all pretty much locked up, although not expensively. They're getting Bear on the cheap. They're getting Van Riemsdyk on the cheap. Jensen is a pretty cheap contract at just a shade over four. So Carlson's the big gun that they've committed to. But they're going to have a lot of money. They're going to be really free of a lot of contracts. Oh, and Wilson's locked up for a long period of time as well.
And yeah, they just got that one done a year or two ago.
So,
right?
I don't know. I'm just throwing a name out there. Is there anybody that you can think of that
I'll throw one
you'd
out.
Be surprised if they were moved?
I'll throw one out there because why not? Because I don't think it makes sense for this person to stay there anymore necessarily. Why not UC Soros? There are a bunch of teams that need goalies. I don't think the Predators, I've said it before, the way that they've played and the teams they've lost to when they really needed to get a win, I don't like the way that they're playing at the moment. I think you can get a ton for UC Soros. There are so many people that need goaltenders. Barry Trotz, first year as the GM there, is he going to kind of just tear it all down and build it back up? Maybe go a little more cheap on the goaltending side and get a lot of assets to get the roster better around a Philip Forsberg if you plan on keeping him and Roman Josi not getting any younger. I don't think it'll happen. I just wanted to see because everyone said not on the radar. I know that there's rumors of this is what the asking price would be, people that would keep somebody like him on their radar, but I don't think he would get traded, which is why I'll say in terms of I'd be shocked, I'd say let's see if the Predators deal UC Soros.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I think they're just too close, but things can happen between now and the trade deadline, right?
Yes, and by the way, on ESPN Bet, if you're in Jersey, plus 1,000 for the Panthers to win the President's Trophy behind the Oilers. So that is that is something I would be interested in.
Throw some money at that. Now, the final one here from Harris. Who is the toughest team for the Rangers to make the Cup final?
Who is the toughest?
So I guess he's saying what team is going to be the path of the toughest resistance. Well, right now, the way the Rangers are playing,
anybody.
It feels like everybody.
Does he mean in the West?
I'm just going to say he's probably talking about who's going to be the toughest team to get through.
I'd say Carolina.
To win the East, and it's going to be Carolina.
I'd say Carolina because no matter what, you have to get through your bracket. You got to get through Carolina if they win their first round matchup.
Right.
Or if you win your first round matchup and you end up being second in the Metro and a Carolina wins, you have to get through them. I would say Carolina. Not to be shortly followed after by Boston and Florida. I think all three of those teams would give the Rangers problems. And Florida and Carolina this season have. But I would say Carolina because it's the most likely opponent they'll have to face before the Eastern Conference Final. And we've seen the way that they play defense can frustrate the Rangers even under Laviolette. So I would say Carolina.
Yeah, there's no question. And the thing about the division, it's really just the Rangers and Carolina. You know, Philadelphia's in free fall now with no heart. I'll be very interested to see how they play after the break. They've lost five in a row. They've got 56 points, so they're already trailing the Rangers by seven. And then you go. Then after that, you're looking at the Islanders who have 52 points, and they have struggled this year. Pittsburgh with 51 points. I mean, that's a large gap to be able to make up in a short period of time here. So it's really between the Rangers and the Hurricanes. And if I had to guess right now, just based on how they played recently, and with Anderson possibly coming back sooner than later, I would say the Carolina's got the best chance to win the division.
Yeah, I don't think you're wrong on that. I mean, the Rangers are going to have to show that they have gotten out of this month and a half to 2 month funk that they're in, and play a little bit more like the team that played in the first 2 months of the season? Or can they at least get back to playing more consistent hockey where there's less turnovers and their goaltending is better? Carolina is getting healthier and seem to be turning the corner the right way as opposed to the wrong way. And they stuck around. The Rangers struggled. They got better. They're 7-2-1 in their last 10. The Rangers are 4-5-1 in their last 10. And now they're only 2 points back and have a game in hand. The Rangers looked like they had a comfortable lead. They did have a comfortable lead, yeah. And they let it slip away. So that's the problem that they're facing right now.
Now I'm just looking at Carolina's schedule because they've got a game in hand, but they've got Vancouver tomorrow.
That's not easy.
And then they've got they follow that up with the Avalanche. Now the both games are at home. So while the Rangers are taking on the Avalanche and the Lightning, the Hurricanes are going to be taking on the Canucks and the Avalanche. So then the Rangers have the Blackhawks on Friday, bit of a soft landing there. But Carolina's going to be right up their rear end, you know, and it's going to be fun to watch how things go the rest of the way. All right, so I haven't heard back from EJ as of yet, but
we got 2 days.
Get him on Wednesday and just get his thoughts on all the things that we talked about. We'll have a few games to talk about, the two tonight, and then we've got a nice 8-game slate on Tuesday. So why don't we do come back on Wednesday, do it again?
I think we should. I think we're responsible and we should do it.
And the way to get in touch with us is at Don LaGreca and at Anthony Pusick, hashtag Game Misconduct. We'll talk to you again on Wednesday. This was the Monday edition of Game Misconduct.
This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.